And his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said unto him, Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? And he said unto them, Have ye never read what David did when he had need and was hungry, he and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests, and gave also to them which were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. So Christ, the Lord of the Sabbath, shows us what it means and what a blessing God intends it to be. Now, if we were speaking in private, and I ask you this question, what from your childhood do you remember with particular pleasure? I wonder what you would say. We could all think of negative things from our childhood, and I have to think several. What would you say was something that you really appreciated and loved about your childhood? I would say for me many things, but one in particular was the observance of the Sabbath day that my family and almost the whole town of Lumberton kept. Well, remember, the main thing on the day was worship morning and evening at church and a good meal, and then sometimes visitation of family or neighbors, sometimes singing of hymns. The whole town was shut down. By custom, one filling station would stay open Sunday afternoon in case of emergency for gas. One drugstore would be open Sunday afternoon in case of emergency medication being needed. But every store, every shop was closed, and there was never showing of movies on the Sabbath. Everything was really quiet, and a vast majority of the population of Lumberton was in church. Great majority on Sunday morning and a little less on Sunday night. And I remember those Sabbath days as a time of rest and happiness and fellowship, and a real sense of security and love that was all around in the town. And then in the summers when I was in the family place, the Blue Farm up in Moore County, I well remember how my great aunts and uncles did all the baking on Saturday, so there'd be no baking on Sabbath day. All the wood was gathered in for the fires on Saturday and piled up. Sabbath day, we were at the House of God Country Church, and it was never in the whole territory was any working in fields. The animals, of course, had to be fed. Nothing else. And my great aunt catechized me, taught me the Westminster Shorter Catechism on the front porch every Sunday afternoon. I remember asking my aunt one time when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I said, Why do the chickens work on Sunday? They're out scratching all over the place. She said, because the chickens are not created in the image of God. They don't need the Sabbath. Well, that time of Sabbath observance, nearly everybody, even the non-believers, honored the Lord's Day. I remember that as one of the beautiful experiences of lifetime. And I have felt very sad to see it thrown away since the 1970s in the Carolinas and elsewhere. Now this passage, Mark 2:23-28, talks about what the Sabbath day really means and what it does not mean. So I want us to look this morning at three things. First, the origin of the Sabbath. Where did it come from? Secondly, a controversy about the Sabbath in Jesus' ministry. And thirdly, the perpetuity of the Sabbath, how its real meaning continues to the end of time. First, then, the origin of the Sabbath. Jesus says in verse 27 of Mark 2, "The Sabbath was made for man." And if we wanted to get that clearly, of course, we would look back to Genesis 2, the story of creation. Genesis chapter 2, or actually start in verse 31 of Genesis 1. "And God saw everything that he had made." This is the end of the 6 days of creation. "And behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day," and that's in Hebrew, Sabbath, "God ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made, forming galaxies and solar systems and nebulae and this earth and all those things. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made." And this seventh day, this Sabbath day, was meant to be a blessing to all the descendants of Adam and Eve. All humankind were to be blessed by working 6 days and resting one day. And then the Sabbath was, in a sense, renewed after the children of Israel came out of the house of bondage in Egypt. And at Mount Sinai, God, as it were, republished the Ten Commandments. And one of them was this commandment to remember the Sabbath day. And so the Sabbath became, it's for all mankind originally, then it becomes a special covenant sign for the people who are going to be redeemed, for Israel in the Old Testament and for the church in the New Testament. So I'll read you from Genesis 20, verses 9 to 11, or verse 8 to 11. "6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son nor thy daughter, thy manservant nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." Now after the Mount Sinai, the renewal of this covenant with Moses, there were three main signs to prove that you were a true Israelite, to prove that you were in the redeemed nation. These three signs were circumcision, the food laws, not eating pork and so forth, and Sabbath observance. Those three things marked off the true Israel of God. Now after Jesus Christ came in the flesh, God in the flesh came, he fulfilled circumcision and replaced it by baptism. You can read about that in Colossians chapter 2. The baptism replaces circumcision. And in Acts 15, the great apostolic council, the first general assembly of the church, after Peter had had this vision of unclean animals being lowered in a sheet and God told him to kill the animals and eat them, the unclean ones. And Peter demurred, and God said, don't call unclean what I've cleansed, and he meant by that the Gentiles can come in. That was the removal of the pork laws. So circumcision was fulfilled, the pork laws were fulfilled, but thirdly, the Sabbath day still goes on. It was a covenant sign, a sign of being in the covenant of grace, and it is still carried on. And interestingly, in verse 27 of Mark 2, Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man. And in the Greek, that's anthropos. That means man in the generic, the entirety of mankind, not just for the Jews, yes, for them, but originally for the whole human race. Anthropos, mankind. Sabbath was made for all of us as a great blessing. So even though the Sabbath is still in force, that's why we're here today in this church, it needed to be cleared up of legalist misunderstanding by Jesus himself. There were some serious misunderstandings about the Sabbath because of Pharisaic legalism, and Jesus straightened that out. And that leads us to the second point, controversy over the Sabbath in the ministry of Jesus. That's found in verses 23 and 24. The story is very simple. Jesus and his disciples were walking on a Sabbath day, and they went past what's called in the authorized version cornfield. It's probably wheat or barley or spelt. And they were hungry, very hungry, and so the disciples plucked off some of the heads of wheat and mashed it up and then ate it. And the Pharisees saw that and were very angry and accused the disciples of Jesus of breaking the Sabbath day. But Jesus defended his disciples. And in defending them and saying they didn't do a single thing wrong, the Lord was teaching what the Sabbath really means and why it is a good gift from God. Jesus gave two reasons why his disciples were in the right when they pulled some handfuls of wheat and ate it on the Sabbath. The first reason is this: life's genuine needs always override even valid ceremonial requirements. Jesus proved this from the Old Testament, which the Pharisees said they believed. He goes back to an illustration from the life of King David. One time David and some of his men were in a difficult position, and they came to the tabernacle. They hadn't eaten in a long time. They were about to starve, and David asked the high priest, could they have some of the showbread? And that was only for the priests and the Levites, and the priest said, well, it's been replaced. It's probably Sabbath. Yes, you can have it. And so Jesus says that experience of David eating the showbread is how God looks after us in an emergency. The idea is this: starvation destroys health and would take away your life. But in fact, the Sabbath was meant to increase health and to bless and build up your life. So originally in the Garden of Eden, some people have said you have two sweet relics from the Garden of Eden that still remain for the human race. One is the Sabbath and the other is marriage. Those two things we still keep from the Garden of Eden. And there, God arranged his creation of the world to be that he would create over 6 days and then rest on the seventh day. That was to be a pattern for our life to the end of time? And many people have asked, including the great St. Augustine, couldn't God have created everything in a split second? Why did it take 6 days? The answer is clear. Of course God could have created everything just right in the twinkling of an eye. But He took 6 days of work and then one day of rest to set a pattern for His image bearers. Because God set up the rhythms of the world in such a way that we're most healthy and most happy when we work 6 days and rest one day per week. Also in this same story that Mark tells in chapter 2, Matthew tells it in a different place, and Matthew adds this, that Jesus quoted an important line from the prophecy of Hosea, where Hosea says, "I have required mercy and not sacrifice." That is to say, mercy is always overriding specific ceremonial observances. Good as they are, mercy is the most important thing. The external legalism of the Pharisees went along with a hard, unmerciful heart. To go through impressive religious rituals and at the same time to hate people and be harsh to them is a stench in the nostrils of God. Sacrifice is useless if our lives are not loving towards other people. That's what Jesus is saying here. And then secondly, Jesus gives another reason why the disciples didn't do anything wrong to pluck that grain and eat it on Sabbath. Jesus says, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, Son of Man is a title that comes from the prophecy of Daniel. And it means something like the heavenly Messiah who has come in human flesh to earth. God in the flesh. Messiah of Israel, Savior of the world. In other words, the one who has the ultimate and the highest authority, though He has come down into our human nature. That means Jesus, the Son of Man, ought to know what this commandment to keep the seventh day holy really meant. For He, along with the Father and the Holy Spirit, gave the Ten Commandments with His own mouth. Thus, Jesus restored Sabbath keeping to its true original meaning and offers it to His disciples and to all humanity as a beautiful gift as well as a holy requirement for their lives. We know that according to John 1:3, Jesus was the agent of creation. It says that God the Father created all things through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So through Jesus, the 6 days of creative work occurred, and therefore He was there, and He ought to know why the Holy Trinity chose to rest on the seventh day. That leads us to the third point, that the Sabbath still is valid. It is perpetual. It still goes on till Christ comes back. Certainly, Jesus cleared away harsh legalist rules from God's Sabbath. Actually, the rules of the Pharisees, most of those rules were not found in the Old Testament. But they came from human tradition that had been added on over the years. Oral tradition, traditions of men, not of God. And Jesus rejected the Pharisaic traditions about Sabbath keeping, but he honored the true biblical Sabbath as to what it really meant. I remember being told about an elderly lady I didn't know her well. They had moved away from Rayford, but occasionally she and her husband would come back to worship. And I wouldn't say she was well-liked by the people, things they remembered about her. And some of the Presbyterians up at Rayford told me that they still remembered with anger how she treated her son, who came home from, got a little time off. He'd been in some of the rough fighting in Europe in World War II. And he was home, just going to have to return to Europe to the fighting. And this lady was very, very strict on absolutely everything and wouldn't budge an inch. And she had baked a cake, maybe on Saturday, and would have it for the family dinner on Sunday. And her son was getting ready to leave on the bus to go back to Fort Bragg and then Europe. And so he asked his mother, could he have a piece of the cake that she had just baked? And she said, certainly not. I baked that cake for Sunday. You're here on Saturday, and I'm not giving you any. The people of Rayford didn't think much of that woman, and when they told me that, I must say, at least of that action, I didn't think much of it. That would be, she wasn't doing it for religious reasons, because it interfered with her strict household schedule. Now that kind of thing was sort of like the Pharisees being so ultra strict on the schedule that you neglect mercy to your own household or to anyone for that matter. So Jesus rejected that sort of legalism and harshness, and yet at the same time he fulfilled every legitimate requirement of the law of God in the Bible. In Matthew 5:17, Jesus said, I have come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. For not one jot or tittle shall pass from the law until all be fulfilled. He says, heaven and earth shall pass away, but thy word shall not pass away. We know that Jesus completely, perfectly, willingly, happily fulfilled every holy requirement of God's written law. What he rejected was the oral tradition of the Pharisees that turned it into something burdensome and unmerciful. But we know Jesus was not really a Sabbath breaker, because at his trial, the Pharisees tried to think of everything they could possibly bring up against him. And at the trial of Jesus, they never once accused him of Sabbath breaking. If Jesus had broken the Sabbath, if Jesus had taught that the Sabbath is no longer in force, how the Pharisees and the chief priests would have leaped with delight at his trial and say, for this reason, he should be killed. But they couldn't. In fact, they couldn't come up with a single sin to list against Jesus. And so they had to hire false witnesses to tell lies to get Jesus convicted of a capital offense and crucified. No, they knew, even Jesus' enemies knew, that he honored the Sabbath day as to what it truly meant, not what some wanted it to mean. If you look in verse 28, therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. And before that, that God made it for mankind. Now, what does Jesus say? It's something, here's the main thing I want you to get this morning. God made Sabbath as a good gift to you. Something that would benefit your life if you receive it. Until the end of time, as long as you and I are in this physical body on earth, and as long as anybody is on earth till Christ comes back, we need a certain rhythm in our life to be healthy and happy and productive. And God says, it's very simple, we need to work 6 days and rest one day every week that comes round. Thus, the Sabbath, as to its true meaning, to be a benefit to our life where we rest from physical labor and mental labor. I've always kept myself never to study on the Sabbath day for things I have to teach on Monday, because that would be just as bad as physical labor. But the keeping of the Sabbath is always in the context of mercy and love and the benefiting of human life. Let me be specific about what the benefit of the Sabbath is. I know a very distinguished cardiologist in Jackson, Mississippi, and in the early 1970s he had a post in, I guess it was Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, and he told me, he treated, if I call the names, you'd know who there were, some distinguished governmental leaders in the first half of the 1970s. You'd know who they were, but I don't wish to call their names. So, an outstanding cardiologist. And he often said, he's also a Presbyterian elder, he would often say that in his practice, cardiovascular matters, that there could be absolutely no medical doubt that a tremendous percentage of heart attacks and strokes could be prevented if people would do what God said and rest one day out of seven. What medical benefits it would give, how it would lengthen our life, and how it would, in a sense, restore the quality of our inner life as well as our physical body's functioning. I remember in 1991 there was an article in Time magazine which I cut out, and it was on stress of modern life with all the running and coming and going that we're able to do with modern transportation and communication and so forth. It was talking about how the, particularly the advanced countries, how the populations are under tremendous stress. And this article brought out that so many people are simply become unable to rest, that may be one reason. I know several medical doctors that I've talked to in various places, including some cousins, and they tell me one of the difficulties of their medical practice is how many people are all the time hounding them to get drugs that, as far as we know, they don't really need those drugs. Why is that? I can't be sure, but I think this. One of the reasons so many people become terribly dependent on medicine that they don't need, and I'm all for medicine when you need it, of course I am, and medical treatment, certainly. But why are people wanting so much medicine when they don't really need it, physically speaking? I believe it's because they don't observe one day out of seven as a day of rest, and they become full of stress and unable to feel at ease and unable really to rest. I saw a study by a sociologist a number of years ago suggesting that say the, in some parts of America, I don't think we do it much around here, my family never did, but some places in America, they take a month off a year as a vacation. 1 month out of 12. They're gone. And this study was showing sometimes they almost drive themselves to death to get from Maine or Canada to Florida or Myrtle Beach or something, and almost beat their heads out to have a good time on a vacation and come back and they're still tired. And here's the suggestion. There's nothing wrong with taking a vacation. It's a good idea. But something would do us much better than a month vacation, even if we could have it. That would be keeping 1 day out of 7 holy to the Lord and resting on that day. I think, having lived this long, that husbands and wives, it would be in general easier and happier to live with each other in peace and harmony. No marriage is perfect, but some are better than others. If they kept 1 day out of 7 holy to the Lord, there wouldn't be the kind of tension that can make people be short-tempered with each other. So Jesus knew what he was talking about when he said, man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath was made for the benefit of mankind. What a blessing Jesus offers us. Not a harsh legalism where we're judgmental of others, and like that woman that wouldn't give her son a piece of cake, or just so many regulations it becomes burdensome. In my childhood, I don't remember it as a burden at all. It was a happy time. And I pray that we will see changes in the state laws, of, if nowhere else, North and South Carolina, that we can sometime before I die begin restoring some of the blue laws and the Sabbath regulation. I want to conclude today by reading you a little bit from the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which many of us learned as a child. I did, on Sundays, no less. And the Westminster Shorter Catechism, question 58 through 61. Some of you probably got it memorized. What is required in the fourth commandment? The fourth commandment requires the keeping holy to God such set times as he hath appointed in his word, expressly one whole day in 7 to be a holy Sabbath to himself. Which day of the 7 hath God appointed to be the weekly Sabbath? From the beginning of the world to the resurrection of Christ, because you know Christ rose the first day of the week, God appointed the 7th day of the world to be the weekly Sabbath. And the first day of the week, ever since Christ arose, to continue to the end of the world, which is the Christian Sabbath. How is the Sabbath to be sanctified? The Sabbath is to be sanctified by a holy resting all that day, even from such worldly employments and recreations as are lawful on other days, and spending the whole time in the public and private exercises of God's worship, except so much as is to be taken up in the works of necessity and mercy. Now, here the Catechism is saying a very wise thing, and according to the Spirit of Jesus, there are works of necessity. You've got to have the police on duty on the Christian Sabbath. You have got to have the hospital open. And there are a number of things. I don't doubt the power company. You've got to have at least a skeleton crew to keep the power going. And, you know, the army has got to be on duty. And sometimes we have to go somewhere personally sick or other requirements. So there are works of necessity which are perfectly appropriate. on Sabbath as well as on any day of the week, and they're works of mercy. It is a mercy sometimes that means you've got to pull the ox out of the ditch and you do no wrong, or help somebody in trouble, you do no wrong. Otherwise, Sabbath is to be kept holy by quietness and calmness and worship, except the times when in various professions you may have to do some work on the Sabbath, and the Lord knows about it, and things of mercy, things of necessity. Then, this question: what is forbidden in the fourth commandment? The fourth commandment forbids the omission or careless performance of the duties required, and profaning the day by idleness, or doing that which is in itself sinful, or by unnecessary thoughts, words, or works about our worldly employments or recreations. I appreciate it that my parents never allowed homework to be done on the Sabbath when I was a little boy, and I never allowed my 5 to do homework on Sunday. Then, question 62. What are the reasons annexed to the fourth commandment? The reasons annexed to the fourth commandment are: God's allowing us 6 days of the week for our own employments. In other words, you can get to the Walmart 6 days a week. You can get to the Bilo or the Food Line or whatever you go to. You got 6 days. Or to the clothing store, whatever. You got 6 days to do it. He's challenging a special propriety in the seventh, his own example, and his blessing the Sabbath day. I want to conclude by reading a little passage from a great Scottish saint who died at age 29 in 1843, Robert Murray McShane. He wrote a wonderful tract, "I Love the Lord's Day." And indeed, when Dillon County, they buried a time capsule in 1976 outside the courthouse to be dug up in 100 years in 2076. One of the things I had put in that time capsule that's still in that vault under the ground, under a marker on the Dillon County Courthouse, was Robert Murray McShane's tract, "I Love the Lord's Day." So maybe somebody in 2076 will take that tract out and read it. And I hope by then, valid Sabbath observance will have been restored in Dillon County. Why not? Let me read you from McShane, and then that's the end of it. "It is a type of heaven when a believer lays aside his pen or loom, brushes aside his worldly cares, leaving them behind him with his weekday clothes, and comes up to the house of God. It is like the morning of the resurrection, the day when we shall come out of great tribulation into the presence of God and of the Lamb, when the believer sits under the preached word and hears the voice of the shepherd leading and feeding his sheep. It reminds him of the day when the Lamb that is in the midst of the throne shall feed him and lead him to living fountains of water. When he joins in the psalm of praise, it reminds him of the day when his hands shall strike the harp of God, where congregations ne'er break up and Sabbaths have no end. When he retires and meets with God in secret in his closet, or like Isaac in some favorite spot near his dwelling, it reminds him of the day when he shall be a pillar in the house of our God and go out no more. This is the reason why we love the Lord's day. This is the reason why we call the Sabbath a delight. A well-spent Sabbath we feel to be a day of heaven upon earth. For this reason, we wish our Sabbaths to be wholly given to God. We love to spend the whole time in public and private exercises of God's worship, except so much as is taken up in the works of necessity and mercy. And McShane knew there are exceptions, of course, to the rule. We love to rise early on that morning and to sit up late, that we may have a long day with God. May God bless us all as we remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. What a greater blessing our lives can become as we do that. Amen.